This is the Norris Group's Real Estate Investor Radio Show, the award-winning show dedicated to thought leaders shaping the real estate industry and local experts revealing their insider tips to succeed in an ever-changing real estate market. Hosted by author, investor, and hard money lender, Bruce Norris.
Hi, thanks for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris. Today, our special guest is Craig Evans. Craig is the owner of Douglas Brooks Homes, his licensed building contractor in the state of Florida with nearly 30 years of construction experience, including residential, commercial, and municipal. A third-generation builder, he has worked from the line activities through management as a subcontractor, laborer, foreman, superintendent, project manager, mid-level manager, and executive management, truly learning the business from the ground up. Craig has successfully grown multiple companies into quality brands by focusing on adding value to every facet of the project and not letting details go unnoticed. The reason we're interviewing Craig is that he's the building partner for us, and we're going to have our new Florida boot camp coming
September 11th and 12th.
Okay.
Southwest Florida, okay. Fort Myers.
So, Craig, we welcome you to our radio show and to our investment group.
Thank you. Thank you for having me this morning, Bruce.
When I read your description, it reminds me of my son, Greg. He had helped me start fixing homes at probably age 12. And then ever since then, been involved in the contracting business one way or the other. And that is a great way to learn. What was your first exposure to the contracting business? Was it your dad or your grandfather?
Well, yeah. So like you said, I'm a third generation in what we do. And my grandfather, his career was a lot of large municipal stuff, bridges and roadways and airports, things like that. And then my father was in commercial construction and built a lot of the high rise buildings up in, 30, 40 story buildings up in Cleveland, Ohio, and Chicago, up on the Great Lakes. And then before I was born, he had moved to Georgia and started in residential construction. So I literally grew up, afternoons and weekends, I would be going around with him to job sites and playing on a plans table while he was inspecting and checking over some jobs. And so I grew up as a young boy on job sites, and that was really where I sank my teeth into this industry that we're in.
I think that's really important. I know Greg has just got an instinct about things, and part of it is he's just been exposed to it for so long, and it's a big help. He kind of took over a track of 93 houses we built in California, and to him it was a piece of cake, and to me it was overwhelming because he just had done so much of it.
When I was 15 going to 6, my dad wanted to really teach me from a master carpenter process, and so he had one of his superintendents said, "Hey, listen, I want to build a workshop out behind our house, and I want you and Craig to build this. It's a two-story workshop, and I want it all to be mortise and tenon." Of course, at that time, I didn't realize that meant no nails, that meant no screws, that meant everything is, notched and pegged. But it really taught me and gave me that bag of tricks of really understanding how to really build something that lasts and build a especially from a structural component, especially with where we're at, structure is so key. Really created an interest in what I do to really see how things are made,
If you could help the Amish do their structures.
Well, so interestingly, we my wife and I lived in Ohio for a number of years, and we had several good Amish friends that lived there, and I tell you, watching them build was just a joy to see people that still build in that manner. Now, obviously, from a production standpoint of where we're at now with our company, that really doesn't work in today's world, but I love the passion for their perfection to the craft. That was a great thing to see.
One of the things that you really have is unique to your construction. You're a general contractor, but you also have a lot of the sub businesses under your own ownership. I think that's pretty unusual, isn't it?
It is. When my wife and I moved to Florida, part of our process was I was looking at it as a business owner. I said, what are the real niches? Because coming into a new market, I knew that for me to compete, I couldn't just go out and compete with a lot of the large home builders, things like that, because you know, I wasn't as big as them. Nobody knew who I was. So I had to develop the niche of how to create our market share. And so what I started looking at is where the weaknesses were. And fortunately for me, the weaknesses were all in the front end, quote unquote, front end of the jobs on the structural components, you know, the site work, the dirt, the compaction of that, the concrete and the block and framing and roofing and all of those components. So, you know, I started putting those teams together and developing that niche of how do we deal with that, which that was right up my alley because, again, I go back to the summer of my 15th year and 16th birthday. That's what my father taught me was how to build things that last. And then, of course, with me as a businessman growing into to how to make things efficient and still build a strong structural component, that was right up my alley. So we did that for several years as actually the only business that we had, which was all of our site work, you know, the land clearing, the grading, the hauling, all of the dirt components. And then, of course, all of the concrete and the block, all of our framing components, setting the roof trusses, all of that, and then the roofing as well. And then also we have our own plumbing division that we do commercial and residential plumbing. So just that company alone stays extremely busy as a subcontract company. That obviously, from a building standpoint with Douglas Brook Homes, that makes our job a whole lot easier because as you said, we control those trades, control those timelines, which help us to be very efficient. But at the same time, we know exactly what we get with that. And that's a big key to me.
Yeah, that's a very big key in Florida. You know, from investors come in California, generally we're looking at a building lot. Okay, there it is. And it needs maybe a finish grade and you're done. That's never true in Florida. You look at it, it's intimidating. You know, you look at it, is that a forest that's on my lot? I mean, you could look at that and go, okay, well, how is that ever going to turn into a building lot?
Exactly. It's that and knowing what to look for as far as, you know, even like you said in that process, is that even a good lot to buy? You know, do we even buy that lot? But once it's purchased, knowing how to work those parameters and knowing how to deal with those situations has been a key component of our business, which obviously for Trinity, you know, we build for so many other people because we're a large subcontract company. So in that process, you know, knowing how to handle those scenarios for other builders as well makes us a very, very viable company. Now, we've had a lot of people that look at us and say, well, isn't that kind of counterintuitive that you're also working for your competition? I look at that as, for one, from a business point of view, it's cash flow. It provides an income. But the reality is that is a business all itself that so many people, just as you mentioned, really don't know what to do. I mean, you know, I mentioned earlier, I came from Georgia. Down to Florida, and in Georgia, on most lots, we're maybe pulling out 7 or 8 trees, and we're going to remove 2 to 3 loads of dirt because there may be some undulation and some in the terrain that we've got to level out, and so we're removing a load or two of dirt. It's not uncommon in Southwest Florida that you're taking off on one lot. We may take off 40, 50, 60 trees. At some point, just because, like you mentioned, it looks like a forest, you know?
One other thing that Craig mentioned yesterday is the flood elevation levels are, you know, they're set. But when they clear, can you talk about when clearing, it might drop the actual, how high the lot is at that time?
Correct, yes. So Bruce, a couple of those things in play is, As we, you know, as you mentioned earlier, we have so much, so many trees and vegetation on a lot of these lots. When we do go through and clear these, that's another component of literally just how much, you know, what we call infill, in other words, the dirt that we're bringing onto the job site has to come in because, you know, if we're taking out, let's call it 40 trees and a lot of underbrush that's on there, to make way for a home. Obviously, from an environmental standpoint, we have to go back and plant additional trees to replace things and make sure that we're protecting our air quality and the environment here. But within that process, when you think about all of the structure of horticulture that's underneath the ground, the root balls and the root structure that's there, that when we pull that out, because obviously we can't build on it because it has to be, you know, that would decay. And so we have to create a structural integrity that's there even underneath the soil. So when we pull that out, a lot of times we can have up to, you know, 10 to 12 loads of infill and dirt that are required just to get us back to quote unquote a starting point. Mm-hmm. So that's where I think a lot of the people don't realize how much dirt is used on these job sites to make it to where it is a livable site. And obviously that we're still hitting flood zone elevations that we have to hit within areas that are flood zone capable. Because again, we live in the state of Florida and the ocean is, you know, sometimes just right around the corner there, you know, so we've got to make sure that we're attaining and reaching those elevations.
From California, honestly, you sit there and look at it and go, okay, well, that's not even a lot. That's never going to be a lot. That's a park or something. So it's a little bit overwhelming when you come from a background like that. The other thing is the additional dirt. You know, somebody asked me, where do they get all the dirt from? I said, you know what? I've never asked that, but it's a lot of dirt every time.
It is. It is. Most of the houses down here, you're going to be dealing with 50 to 75, depending on the area that you're in. You can deal with 50 to 75, maybe even 80 loads of dirt per lot for a single family residence. And that's a lot of dirt. But fortunately, you know, we're in Florida, so we can only dig so deep. But there are several areas of the state that have been approved for the mining pits for materials. And they're pulling dirt out for house pads and construction, things like that. But they're also pulling out rock and different materials that they'll use for roadway construction and that type of process.
Okay.
Fortunately, there are a couple mines down here. One of them still has about 83 years left worth of material to be able to pull out of.
I'm glad you said that, because that's probably just about as many lots as there already are available in Florida.
Well, you know, in Cape Coral alone, where our headquarters is at, there's currently right about 80,000 vacant lots still available.
That's unbelievable.
People don't realize the land mass that is down here. You know, because when you look at a map, Florida's this little strip of land sticking out in the water, and they don't realize the land mass that is available. And it already has roadways put in, and most of the infrastructure is there. We've just got to develop the individual lots, which is very cost effective when you're coming to build a single family versus trying to go in and develop an entire neighborhood.
Right. That's the big difference, I think, just out of the gate. If you're in California, you know, you're usually buying a finished lot that, you know, depending on the county, it could be 100 to a lot more than that. But here the lots are very reasonable because they're so plentiful, and they probably will be for a while. That's what's very attractive to California investors, is we're not used to a new home starting with a two. We're used to the lot and the permit starting with almost, you know, a two. So that's why it's really, really attractive. Well, one of the reasons why it's attractive to buy a new home is that you do have the elevations. So sometimes they change and they're more strict, or the building codes are more strict. So when you buy a new home, you're up to the code that they're demanding right now. And if you buy something 20 years old, then it'll be at a different code, and you can pay a price for that. The other thing is everything you do is block. And that's not true of some builders, and even in Florida. So a block is obviously a superior product when you have a hurricane.
You are exactly correct in the process that a lot of people that have some of the older homes, they struggle when it comes to certain things of purchasing insurance, you know, getting replacement utility systems, you know, because everything fails after a time. So if we've got a house that's, you know, 40 years old, and there is a septic system in that has to be replaced at that point, you know, the elevations of where that was placed 40 years ago are now completely different. So now the landscape of that house looks completely different because the code heights have changed based off, you know, what the FEMA floodplains and flood levels are set at. So buying new construction in that process, you know, really assures you that you're, you know, what we call high and dry down here. You know, you're getting in a place to where when the storm comes through, we're not flooding homes. So that's one big component of the new construction process. But the other aspect is just as we saw with the storms coming through the Gulf, you know, this week and weekend, and, you know, our prayers and thoughts are with everybody in the Gulf Coast up and through Louisiana and Texas as they're going to be getting pounded with some of these storms. But, you know, fortunately, and this kind of goes back to 91 when Andrew came, you know, Hurricane Andrew came through Miami. All of the Florida codes changed dramatically then. So the amount of steel that is in the footers and it's in the walls themselves and what we call a tie beam, which is the top collar of the wall structure itself that really locks everything in place. The amount of steel that are put in these walls is pretty intense. I mean, there's a lot of material and steel that's put inside these block walls and inside the footers themselves, the foundation footers. But then, like I say, the size of the footers, the placement of them, and then the amount of concrete that, not just that it's the block walls themselves, but the amount of concrete that goes in to fill certain cells of the wall so that we've got columns of concrete also going through that are encasing the columns of steel that go in through these walls. It's actually a very, very strong construction product. And it was interesting to see after Hurricane Andrew hit the amount of damage that was caused. And then when we had Hurricane Charlie in 05, how much less damage was caused. And then when Irma, you know, Hurricane Irma came through and of course just from a sense of devastated the state. But the reality was there was not a lot of the homes that were demolished, if we want to call that, were actually still the older homes. The new construction, there was not a lot of damage that caused. I mean, you know, my personal home, I literally had one roof vent that came loose. That was it. So I had no interior damage. We lost no roofing material. We lost no windows. So everything was fine.
In Hurricane Andrew, I actually came into Florida at the invitation of somebody that was an investor to look at damaged homes. And when we were driving around, you'd pass neighborhoods, even back then, that were block construction with minimal damage. Then you go to a track that was stick built. It was a whole different story. It was unbelievably different. So, you know, you kind of made a note to yourself, okay, if we're going to do anything in Florida, it's going to be blocked. That is for sure.
That's
I think
correct.
What I want to try and impress with people is that when you walk into Florida, you need somebody that understands the dirt and the lot business. It's just really important. Because also when you go to different areas, you're going to have choices that maybe in California are, you know, you don't have necessarily areas that still are septic or well water. And so it's really important to have a local knowledge of, okay, where these areas are. And by the way, that doesn't necessarily mean you want to avoid those areas because some of them are very high in demand and bring really high rents, but you just need to have somebody you can rely on that knows the area, knows how much dirt's going to be moved. So you get an accurate number from the start, because that's where we definitely had problems with that. We're not intending to have it again.
With us on the job, that will not be the issue. Again, you know, and I think part of that, Bruce, is one of the things that you mentioned in the relation of where a lot of these lots are and their demand. These areas where, let's say, where a septic and a well is and those types of processes, those are actually some of the highest demand areas currently based off the absorption rate of the market, because of the amount of lots that are available and the price that people, the affordability that people can get in, whether it's for a rental, whether it's, you know, the single mom that's looking for a home, whatever the scenario, the affordability of these markets within these areas are fantastic for the purchaser and the buyer to be able to buy. And I know a lot of places coming from other marketplaces in the country, you know, the concept of a well and septic versus a city water and sewer, you know, from a city perspective, a utility is our municipal utility process is a foreign concept. But again, just like with block construction and all the things that have transpired in the construction techniques and the structural techniques, the septic designs, the materials that are being used currently with that has come so far over the last, you know, 10, 12 years. It's a real science to see how these things go in. There's a lot of painstaking work that goes into making sure that things are excavated correctly into the right depths and how things work and the correct flows. And a proper septic system literally can last you 30 years with no problems. It's a great process. I would say it's, you know, we encourage people all the time. That is nothing to shy away from because it's a well and septic lot. That's actually, like I say, in these areas right now, these marketplaces, because of affordability, that's still a very, very desirable process.
What the place I can relate that to is an area in California called Temecula. Temecula was one of the last areas that got built, and so almost everything was new starting in the 80s and early 90s, and it was on septic and sometimes well, and that area has exploded in value. So if you avoided that, you know, because of those things, you missed a big opportunity in California because it grew to be one of the best cities because everything was much newer. And that was right. That was kind of how it panned out. And that's what you're talking about in these areas. Everything there is going to be pretty much a new house. And that's not bad for an area.
That's correct. That's right. And that, obviously that helps the comp rates on things as well as you're looking because your neighbor, most of your neighbor's houses are newer homes.
You know, I sent you a chart this morning and you sent it back. I didn't get to pull it up yet, but it was rather an astonishing thing that something like 90% of all available listings went pending in this particular county in Florida. 90% of the listings went pending.
97.
Yeah, that's crazy.
The amount of stuff that's moving right now is really incredible. And the other chart that I'd sent you, showing where things are at between multifamily and single family homes as far as rent rates and that process is astounding at how things are going. But what was interesting is it shows just in Cape Coral, which again is the city that we're based out of, you know, we kind of work through a tri-county area here, but in this area that we're at, they're projecting that just over the next 3 years, another 2,562 family units per year being added to this marketplace. And that's just to Cape Coral. That's not including mm-hmm. Charlotte County or Pinellas County or Sarasota County, all these, you know, when you think about that's astronomical growth, people that are coming to this area and needing housing.
Because we pay attention to those statistics, the population gain in Florida is very different than the population gain in California. California gains population because more babies are born than people die. Florida's almost 100% of Florida's population gain is a migration of a family or an adult from either within the other 50 states or from other countries. So when we get migration in Florida, and I've already looked at that, I'm using the term we as a Floridian here, it's an adult showing up, and that's a big deal because that's either rental demand or a buy demand.
That's correct.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. I'm going to touch on your build time with a little bit of trepidation because I've never really heard this number before, but I think I just want to point out, and I'm not trying to hold you to this number but what it points to is that because you have some vertical integration, you can control things better than most builders. And right now everything's in demand, so you can't necessarily get everybody to respond to you, but your typical build time for the models that you produce right now is under 4 months. Is that accurate?
Absolutely. Well, from the time we pull the permit and have the permit in hand, we are most of the time actually less than 90 days.
I really hated to use that term.
I say this, I want to clarify this, but we have had builds where everything clicked and everything hit exactly perfect, and we have had builds that we, from the day we pulled the permit and scraped the lot and started clearing to the day we CO'd because everything went perfect, we've had days to where we finished our builds in, or we've had certain houses that we finished our builds in 54 to 56 days. That's not every build by any stretch of the imagination, but you know, where most people are looking at, you know, 120 to, you know, 4 months to 8 months to build a house, we are most often always less than 90 days.
Yeah.
From the day we pull a permit.
Yeah. And that speaks to your process. And I think to your control of some of the really important elements in the beginning, you know what you're doing and you have the you have the staff to where you don't have to, you don't have to wait for someone to have an opening for you. You already know what the schedule is going to be. And it's a, that's a big deal and a big advantage. Here's a, that's probably the toughest question I'm going to ask you, but it's a question, of course, that comes up from investors. So we're in a hot market. Everything that you could possibly build would sell right now for retail. And you're willing to take on building a home where there's some equity left for an investor and do it repetitively. So I guess the best question is, why is that model attractive to you? And we're glad it is, by the way.
Well, honestly, Bruce, I believe, and I've said this to you in the past, but I'll say this again for people to hear. I believe a lot of what makes this model attractive to us is because of who you are and what you have stood for through the things that have transpired over the last 6-7 months through this process with some of the people in the past. You know, being men of integrity and doing things the right way says a lot to me. You are correct. Could I sell plenty of homes at a retail price point and not have to give equity away? Absolutely. I mean, literally right now, I don't have a single house on the market that is finished with construction that is available for sale. Everything has been sold. I mean, as fast as we're putting stuff on the market, it's, you know, we're having homes that we're pulling out that are spec builds, and before we even get our permit out, we're selling stuff. But within this process, the other thing that I liked about the model, obviously one aspect is again, who you and Aaron are as men and how you carry yourselves and how you conduct business. But, you know, aside from that, it still has to make business sense. So when, with the setup that we're working through and that you guys have, you know, dreamed big on and put in place is, you know, I've told our staff that this is really almost a drive up scenario to where the investor is able to drive up and select which meal they want through the drive-in and, you know, what options they want on their hamburger and go. So from our side of it makes sense because, you know, when we're not having to spend the time that we do with a retail buyer, that makes a lot of sense to us, you know, because now we're able to incorporate those. And when we're turning the product as fast as we can turn it, it still makes sense for us to continue to have that as an aside for us. You know, plus the other aspect is as our company continues to grow and we're moving into other markets, that makes a great aspect for an offering for other investors to be able to look at housing in other markets. You know, we're not there yet. We're growing and growing quickly, but as I'm looking at a long-term for our company, I think what the Norris Group does and offers and how they're putting this program together, how you and Aaron have put this program together, makes a lot of sense for not the whole of our business model, but definitely a good piece of our business model to be, you know, intertwined with who you guys are and how everything works. It just makes a lot of sense to us from that aspect for the long term. Again, not as a whole, you know, it's not my entire business model, but right. I think it makes good quality sense for us to be aligned with people like yourselves and what you're doing. And, you know, because again, our goal is trying to make a fair profit for a quality product and do that as many times as we can. And when, you know, when I look at, we don't have to put the amount of time in that we would normally do on a retail build, then at that point I can start pulling the costs out and everything makes sense.
Yeah, that's what we're, you know, that's why all the effort is done up front, you know, with the meetings that we've had and the design of the plan and all that. So it becomes simpler after that. It's been, yeah, the last 45 days, it's taken a fair amount of time of everybody's trying to get to the, okay, this is what we want, but you know, we're there. So that's quite an accomplishment.
Well, I think it's that old adage of, you know, anything worth doing is typically going to be tough. If it was easy, everybody would do it. And, you know, yeah we've all had a lot of long days and putting in a lot of time to get this process right and work through certain, you know, concepts and plans and timing and that whole process. But I think at the end of the day, you know, with all of us being able to put in that time and get this process ironed out. And with the patience of the investment groups and the teams of investors and the people that you bring to the table, I think that process, you know, through their patience and the work that you guys and our team have done together to pull this, I think it'll be a great process moving forward and provide a streamlined ability for people to invest.
I think what's important for everybody to know, too, that listens to this is that, you know, during this process, we definitely had differences of opinion on what let's do this and let's add this. And a very valuable input from you was, okay, we can do that. Here's the cost. And what will it rent? What will it bring in? Extra rent? Nothing. That's an important local knowledge to have. For instance, in sales, you know, I'm working with a friend, a contractor that I brought from California. We're flipping some homes. And we realized in certain areas, a three-car garage is a big deal. In other places, it's not. You know, so that's what you were trying to say. I said, we could add this. It's going to be this much, but it will not change your ability to rent this for a dollar more. And that's
correct.
That was good to hear, because that's what we're really trying to accomplish, is the best bang for the buck.
That's right. And that's, I think, with what we've put together, you know, between our team and your team, as far as working through and like you said, everybody hasn't always agreed, and that's okay. We won't always agree in life, you know, but we've got to be able to continue to work through for what's the best end goal. And in that, I think what we've got is a great product lineup that is an offering for many different price points, allowing some equity through there to be able to, for the investor to have an equity position as well. I think where we're at makes a lot of sense. And we've got product in there that is, you know, we can do some additional things that if they're willing to flip and try to go that route, then, you know, there are some size models that would work in a flipping scenario compared to just a hold and rent. So I think what we've done allows a lot of flexibility for people to have options of how they, what they choose to invest.
You just opened Pandora's box, man.
Uh-oh.
I'm only pulling your leg.
That's okay. I'll cut it.
People interested in the flipping side.
I'll just cut it out.
Joey, back that line out, man.
Thanks for joining us, Craig. I really appreciate all the effort from the very first day we met, as I was paying delinquent bills to contractors. You and I had our first half hour conversation or more, and it's been a pleasure. It really has been.
For more information on hard money loans and upcoming events with the Norris Group, check out thenorrisgroup.com. For information on passive investing with trust deeds, visit tngtrustdeeds.com.
The Norris Group originates and services loans in California and Florida under California DRE License 01219911, Florida Mortgage Lender License 1577, and NMLS License 1623669. For more information on hard money lending, go to thenorrisgroup.com and click the Hard Money tab.